your mouse is dead, and the computer is on life support. Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
As we open the new year, I've got a number of things to talk about this week on the IT Pro Series. Tech is not the root cause of the failure. Humans are. On a scam series, the Authority Echoes scam. And this is scammers pretending to confirm what they already know to get what they don't know. Keith Emcedor is going to discuss why do people can become fanboys or fangirls in their particular field of interest. Mark explores the idea of used computers, printers, and more. Steve has a question from Sue, and she asks whether sci-fi was right or wrong. Dr. Doreen Galley, of course, will cover the perils of AI, and I will actually talk about AI here in just a moment or so. I've got a couple more listener questions as well. Elena, are TVs capturing secret data about us, and what can we do? And Christopher asks in the next segment, what does tech look like in 2026? And oh, one more. Simone, why do so many apps ask for location data and do they really need it? All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. You can download the podcast anywhere, but we do have the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can also reach out to me there and ask me your computer questions, your technology concerns. Or you may phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. And news at the transition through the holiday season, really, news is just abysmal. There's so much in regards to what happened last year, what's going to happen this year, and things like that. And I'll touch on what's going to happen this year or what I think tech looks like, and that'll be next. But I do want to kind of intro this year with something I've been thinking about, and that is how much pressure people feel in regards to keeping up with technology, and that pressure is really unnecessary. Most of us don't need to stay ahead of anything, but we do need to stay comfortable. And that comfort, that sense of ease with the tools around us is becoming one of the most important life skills that we can have in the modern day. And that is going to bring us to AI because it's already a part of our daily lives. Whether you realize that or not, it doesn't matter. It's in your email already, starting to sort your message. It's messages. It's in your photos apps and identifying faces in your maps, predicting where you're headed and guiding you along the way. And in your search results, shaping what you see. We didn't suddenly enter into an AI-powered world. We simply started noticing the water we've been swimming in. And that makes AI the perfect place for us to refresh our skills, our tech skills, for this year ahead. And one of the easiest ways, and I've talked about this, the easiest way to build your comfort with AI is through tiny daily exploration. You don't need hours of study or a big plan to learn AI. What you need is a moment, a small moment each day where you try something new. Think of it as a micro curiosity, not a project, not homework, just a little experience and nudge that keeps you moving forward. And this is where, I've said this many times, 15 minutes a day, it becomes powerful. Because repetition and experience with this will build skill without effort. If you give yourself that small amount of time, 15 minutes, to explore something with that eye, not to master it, just to try it. And I'm talking about Copilot or ChatGPT or Claude or whichever one or all of them. Each time you go through, you're going to be amazed at how quickly it becomes second nature. It's like learning a new route to work. You don't memorize the map. You just drive it a few times and it starts to feel natural. And the best part of this is that small AI tasks are simple and low stakes. You can ask AI to rewrite something you wrote to make it clearer. You can have it summarize an article you don't have time to read. You can ask it to brainstorm a few ideas before you make a decision. These are not big tasks. They're not intimidating, but they are confidence builders. Little tiny steps that help you understand what AI can do for you. Now, just as AI becomes more central, the fundamentals of digital life still matter just as much as ever. And one of the biggest sources of frustration for people is file management. And when you know where your files live and how to keep them organized, your computer stops feeling like a junk drawer and it starts feeling like a workspace again. And this means going through and cleaning up everything and controlling it. And along with that, I might suggest account hygiene, which isn't about fear. It's about clarity and peace of mind. And I'm suggesting clean out old accounts, update your recovery information, make sure your passwords aren't all the same, because that is really a big security concern. And I don't want to make this into a security lecture. I want this to be about reducing friction in your daily life. I want your digital world to feel lighter and more manageable. And that's very key here. And I do want you to go through and make sure that you're going through all of your settings. Every device you have, every operating system, every application you have has a settings menu that is a control panel for your comfort, like a thermostat. And you need to set those thermostats or control panels or settings menus. So we're talking about notifications, accessibility, display, sound, all of this. And spending a little time getting familiar with those options can make your devices feel like they're working with you instead of against you. I might even suggest with each of those items I've talked about, with the file management, with the account hygiene and the settings literacy, spend a few minutes a day, 5-10 minutes a day with each of those. Do I want you to replace the AI with it? No, but if you have to, once every week, you might shift that around. The key concern is approaching all of these. And once you've built all of these basics, the next step is going to be that long-term confidence, the kind that comes from curiosity, not from expertise. Confidence doesn't come from knowing everything. It comes from knowing you can figure things out. And the best way to build that confidence is to explore these things, all of them, and perhaps even new features, one a month perhaps, and not everything at once. The idea here is putting one more thing into your tool belt that makes your tech feel a little bit more familiar. And I want to set you at ease here. I'm asking you to take jumps forward, small jumps. We're not talking jumping over the Grand Canyon. We're talking about little steps forward. And the truth is, modern technology is surprisingly hard to break, which means you can experiment without fear. You can tap buttons, open menus, try features, explore settings. And that freedom there removes the anxiety that a lot of people feel around technology. I'm seeking to empower you here. I'm seeking to instill the idea of a sense of play in your mind here. And that sense of play is one of the best teachers you'll have. Learning technology is something that you might equate it to like learning a musical instrument. You're not going to start off with a concert. You start off learning just one or two notes, one or two chords, and you try things, you make mistakes, you try again, and slowly over the course of time, you get better. As we begin this new year, I've wandered through a lot of different things, but I want to leave you with this simple reminder. capability doesn't come from those big leaps. It comes from those small steps. That little bit of curiosity, that little bit of patience, that little bit of time every day. I'm not asking you to go on out and master AI. I'm not asking you to go on out and master any big, huge field in technology. I'm asking you to just become a little bit more comfortable with this. And that comfort comes from exploration, which is a great way to start this year. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with what I think tech will look like in 2026 next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
going down.
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
I had a great question with Christopher, and he called me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Now, his question really went in a number of different directions, and it was, what does tech look like in the new year? And he was asking a number of different things. The key thing that he started off was, is RAM really going to stay up high till 2027? Solid-state drives, are they going to keep being high-pricing? And we went into other areas like AI and so forth. And let's look at this. I mean, this is one of those moments where the tech world could be standing on, I think of like it's standing on a diving board. It's deciding whether it's going to jump or it's going to just make a big splashy announcement about jumping. And next week, CES, we're going to see a number of different announcements, and it's going to be very interesting to see what those announcements lead to. And where we're going to be going. Of course, a number of those announcements that happen at CES, they're about things that aren't going to come to fruition for a number of months. CES, the big, huge, splashy show off in Vegas, which makes Vegas look like a podunk town because it is that flashy, is the big space to be watching. But it's known for vaporware. It's known for things, various announcements that just don't come to place. Let's start off with AI. AI is definitely not slowing down. It's not going to be replacing everything. It's not taking over the world, but it is becoming the new layer that's baked into a lot of tools that we use. It's not flashy and it's not science fiction. It's just being woven into everything we use. We're talking about the apps and devices that we rely on already. We're talking about websites. We're seeing this in all kinds of different places, from your photo editor to your email, your word processor, your browser, and all of these different little nudges with AI that make things smoother, faster, or a bit more aware of what you're trying to do. I remember Clippy from back in the day. It looks like you're trying to write a letter. In Outlook, it just dives right in. It says, hey, I know you're writing an email. Let's help you write this. And it auto-predicts a number of words ahead of what you're typing, and it offers to write whatever it is that you want it to write. So it's very interesting in that whole regard. This year, AI is going to probably stop being a novelty. It's going to start folding itself into new areas and start being kind of what you might consider infrastructure in everything we do. There's going to be a lot less of, ooh, look what it can do, and a lot more of, no, that's just how the software works these days. Now we go to the initial item. RAM prices are really, they're spiking. They look like initially like they are kind of flattening out, and we're going to see this all unfold. This particular thing, actually everything I'm talking about, is gazing into the future. I could be completely wrong, but right now it looks like it's going to flatten out for a while. And it's finding a new price where that is what the market will bear. People still need RAM for their computers, their desktops, their laptops, and whatnot. Crucial is gone, or will be gone in a matter of just a number of weeks here. And that's because they're shifting all of the RAM that was made there over into AI. So there's a lot of these different things. And we're going to have to see how that all completely unfolds. And yes, we could see that RAM just takes a dip because a lot of the personal market isn't using as much of it. Everybody's going, no, I'm not going to buy it. It's too expensive. There's been a distinct amount of sticker shock. And that could cause a price correction, dropping the price of RAM. But it might not. So we're going to see how that all unfolds. A lot of concern here because a lot of older systems, people who bought new systems back 5 years ago, this is the point in time where they're really starting to feel the age of that five-year-old system. A matter of, they've been holding out for Windows 12, which never arrived. And at this point, we're looking, it's going to be 2027 before we even see Windows 12. We could possibly, towards the end of this year, see Windows 12. Who knows? That's still something we haven't seen any indication of anywhere along the way. New processors, however, are getting faster. They're being designed with AI directly in mind. There's little neural processing chips and accelerators that are built in, and that's going to kind of change things. And it's no longer about raw speed anymore. It's about being able to handle the workload gracefully. We're also going to probably see a shift quietly in laptops. A little bit cooler of operations, more emphasis on efficiency, and that'll lead to better battery life. And this is something where we're going to have to wait and see how that all rolls out. Smart home tech, that continues moving forward. There aren't any dramatic leaps that I'm seeing right now. A lot more devices talking to each other without needing a whole lot of conversion hubs and a bunch of apps and things like that. Privacy conversations are going to probably be the big attraction for most people. Everybody's starting to realize some of the creep factor that's involved. I've been aware of the creep factor, and there are times where I make judicious decisions about what I do and what I don't do to avoid all of my information being out on the internet, but that's something to think about. And we're going to see more conversations about this, especially as AI becomes more common and people are going to start asking harder questions about where their data goes, how it's used. And companies have been rather brazen for a while now. And some companies will respond. And some because they have to. Some because they think they have to. And this is going to shift things around. We'll see a lot there. We're going to see new wireless standards, better displays, smarter cars. A lot of these different things are coming our way. And it's hard to predict everything. But I think 2026 is going to be a pivotal year. It's not going to be anything miraculously pivotal, but it's going to lay up a lot of the things that will lay the groundwork for what is to come. And a lot of it's going to involve and rely upon our interaction, how we as a whole together decide where tech is going. It's not going to be a big, huge revolution. It is going to be somewhat of a reset, a shift, some moving around, and there is going to be a chance for all of us to probably catch up without too much pain. Yes, the new year in tech looks less like a wild leap forward and more like a steady step into something that's going to be smarter, faster, and maybe a little bit affordable in some directions. Not all of them, but we'll see how it all rolls out. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Keith McCedor joins me now, and Keith, I have a question. I want to explore something with you, which is... And I want to think about this as a much broader spectrum than just saying, hey, Keith, you're an Apple fanboy. But here's the thing. We all, every one of us, wherever we are in our nerddom, that guy over there, he's a Ford fanboy. That guy over there, he's a Chevy fanboy. You know, whatever it is. And that can be in sports, or it can be in cars, or it can be, in our case, tech. And I want to ask you what you think about the possibility of the psychology, I guess, of tech loyalty. Why do you think people become fanboys in their particular area? And I am a little bit less fanboyish than your typical nerd or geek. I I like a lot of different options. So I'm talking to you right now on a Mac. I have an iPhone, but over here I've got a Windows system, and I love my Windows systems just as much. I'm just as much likely to use ChatGPT or Copilot or Claude or one of the just move back and forth between the different AI engines, just as an example. And I want to know what do you think makes up your idea of why do we become fanboys, I guess. Well, or fangirls.
Well, I
know you can't speak to the latter of those. But
nice. I'll put it this way, Benjamin, very succinctly, because there was a point in my life where I most certainly was. At this point in my life, I know that I'm no longer, like, I know you like to joke that I'm an Apple fanboy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally joking.
The reality of it is, in the early days of computing, I most certainly was, and I'll own that fair and square. But as I've gotten older, as I've seen Apple make decisions and take courses of action that don't necessarily coincide with my vision of what they should be doing, I was like, okay, I'm still an enthusiast. I still am on board. You know, they haven't done anything to make me run for some other solution, but, you know, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid anymore, as it were. You know, I can be critical of them. Why somebody becomes a fanboy? I'm going to say it's largely because their product or their software or the way they're conducting business has triggered something in them that really, really resonates. Kind of like when we're kids and we're watching Star Trek. And it's like, oh, well, this really resonates. I love this, you know, and I love all the features about it. And, oh, there's other people out there who love it too. I want to hang out and talk to those people.
Good first experiences hold for a long time.
Yes. I mean, for me, I remember early computing, because I had an uncle who always had computers in his house because, you know, he worked for the county. But they were all DOS-based before Windows. And it was like, if you didn't know programming, if you didn't know code, it was just a black screen with a flashing cursor. And then the Mac comes along with its graphical user interface, and all of a sudden, there's a desktop metaphor, you know, that's very easy to understand. Kind of like today when you put an iPhone in a small child's hand and they understand swipe to unlock, you know, just intuitively because it's glowing and pulsing, swipe it in this direction. Mm-hmm. And I remember my oldest, who's 15 years old now, she picked up my wife's phone when she was about maybe, I don't know, a year, year and a half old, saw that swipe to unlock and then all the icons appeared. I saw her face light up because she had a discovery. It was this little epiphany. And I remember early on with the Mac, back when the Macs were still black and white machines and nine inch screens, that it was very easy to have all these little aha breakthrough moments very easily. And that was something that really made me embrace the platform. Like anything else, I think as long as you keep getting jazzed by what a company does and the direction they're going in, despite other people being naysayers or enthusiasts for an alternate platform, whether it's Windows or Linux or what have you, you know, you're going to have your reasons why you want to defend what it is you do. And that's the other thing. The reason, the core, I think, why people become fanboys is that once they've made a decision to embrace a particular platform,
they'll make all the excuses to defend it, no matter how bad those excuses are.
That is part and parcel of it, Benjamin. But the reality of it is, you've made an investment, whether it's time, whether it's emotions, whether it's money, or a combination of all of them. You've made an investment, and you want to see that investment pay off. And you want to see the company that you're investing your time and emotions and money in continue to stay in business, to support the decision you made, because then it validates your decision in perpetuity. So that's what I think about why people become fanboys.
It's interesting because way back in the day, and you and I have discussed this elsewhere, both behind the microphone and off air, the idea that I was both a Star Trek fanboy and a Star Wars fanboy.
Same here.
And both of them, I feel, have left me down because I held on for Same so here. Long because of those initial experiences. I remember being a little kid of whatever it was, 8 or 9 or 10, whatever. And seeing Star Wars and seeing Star Trek, the original. Mm-hmm. And it's gone in such a direction since that it's like, why did I like this? Mm-hmm. It's kind of unfortunate. But as for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Mark Brownstein joins me now. And Mark, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I have the idea of, is it better to buy a used computer than a new one? Sometimes used computers are just as good as new ones. Depending where you get them, they might have been refurbished, so they're probably almost as good as new.
Yeah.
Some of these are off lease. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I have seen that, and I go back and forth with, like you were going to go into off-lease. I go back and forth on off-lease. That is the preferred direction I would suggest anybody go in.
Yes.
Not private party. You never know what people in the private party world are doing with their computers.
That is true. Now, I have seen some at Staples and eBay and other places. And yes, off-lease is one of the ways to get that. Some companies retire their equipment after 3 or 4 years. It's capital equipment, so they get no more tax benefit from them, so they get rid of them. Would a new printer be better than a used printer? Would a new monitor be better than an old monitor? And in some cases, no. Monitors, yeah, could be a problem because they've gone to 4K. And if you want a 4K monitor, a 3-year-old monitor is not going to do you much good.
Yeah. And the problem with used monitors, too, is there's a lot of burn-in and different issues like that can really throw it off. Yeah.
Now we get to the subject of printers. And I wonder how useful printers are going to be for a lot of people. I just bought an HP color laser printer for $99. Mm-hmm. It would have been about $300 when I was new. And according to the printed information sheet, this is a 2019 computer. It had about 8,000 pages printed on it.
Printer, yeah. 8,000 is, that sounds like it's a business printer almost.
That's 6 years.
For six years.
1,100 printed pages a year. That's not a whole lot. This printer was supposed to be good for 20,000.
Oh, yeah.
Small business.
Yeah.
So I asked people that I'm into an internet print internet press group, yeah, an organization, how, yeah, much printing they do. And they don't do much either. It's maybe 200 or 300 pages a year. And most of that is printing recipes and things like that.
Yeah. I will tell you, so on my side of this street, in the last year, I would say I maybe printed, I'll say 150 pages max. I think it was a year and a half ago. We bought a ream of paper, my wife and I, for our printer. And I think we're halfway through the ream. So that, so you figure maybe 200 pages a year. We're not printing like we used to. And this is reality, nobody is.
That's true. It's email. It's stuff like that where you can get to it electronically. You don't need to print it.
Sure.
In most cases.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, most of the printing I do is I will use the I'll use the Windows PDF printer, and I'll print, yes, it to a PDF, and then I'll just save it if I need to.
That's right. I do that too. Another thing about used printers, if we're still talking about people printing, is that the toner cartridges or the ink is so much less expensive. I had an old 10-year-old Samsung printer I got for a nun years ago. I paid, yeah, $70 for it.
Yeah.
And back then, the cartridges were $30, $40, $50. I got two cartridges for $20, and each cartridge has 2,000-page capacity. And okay, I've never gone past the first cartridge.
$11,
nice, yeah, for, yeah, two. Yeah. So some of that stuff is really helpful.
Yeah, yeah. It depends on who you're getting, what cartridges you're getting. Like HP, I haven't bought an HP cartridge in a while, but the last I checked, oh, they wanted for the four colors, CMYK, or roughly blue, red, yellow, and black.
Yeah.
They wanted something like $450 direct. I'm like, well, wait a second. That's I might as well just buy a used printer for that point of money.
That's true. That's true. That amount of money is crazy. And you can avoid it. If you're a business, businesses may be smart and they might still buy these off-label cartridges.
Yes.
As long,
yes,
as they work.
Yes. That's exactly what I did. I went with a third-party retailer, and they worked just fine, although HP has been scaring a lot of people, saying that they're going to disable it with the next software, yeah, update or something like that.
Yeah, they've been doing that. For years, they've done this, and they come up with electronic chips or something that are supposed to stop you from being able to do it. But the people who sell these cartridges are smart enough to figure out what the chips do, so you can still use them.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very interesting, evolving world, all of this. And I think we're going to see, the demise of printers in the near future, at least for most of us. The companies that used to make printers or are still making them, their lines are reducing. Where they used to have a whole aisle, both sides of the aisle with printers at your local office supply store, it's now dwindling. It's a few printers. It's a handful of printers.
Yeah.
So
I think we'll still see them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be very interesting. We still haven't gone full paperless, so yeah.
Some things are still needed for.
Yeah, definitely. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Mark Brownstein. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way.
The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they have discovered one technique that is really easy to gain your trust is to give you information that you already know is true. They want you to repeat back stuff that you already can confirm easily. And this technique is called authority echoing. Instead of inventing a story, they mirror back a valid item or a belief. And this might start off as, this is Benjamin Rockwell, right? Yes. Yes, it is. Your package is delayed. Yeah, I expected that. Your account had unusual activity. Oh, yeah, not again. Your refund is pending. Oh, my. Again? And they feel legitimate because they align with your expectations. Not because they contain real information. It's because you are already preconditioned to just nod there. And that's their goal. They want you to agree. They want you to go, And once you agree with a premise, you're more likely to follow on with the next series of items, whether it's instructions or whatever. And this tactic works well, especially during busier seasons. And they target it. And this is throughout the year. So you're expecting your tax refund. And so they'll focus on that. You're focused on Christmas gifts. So they'll focus on that. And they just shift and adjust all the way along. But their goal here is to hit you when you're expecting a certain thing, a package, a refund, an account alert, whatever it is. And then they go through to the next step and they escalate with verification steps. And this is where they start the real data harvesting. And victims will say, it sounded legitimate. It sounded exactly like something that would happen to me. And this is a psychological lever that's being pulled by those bad guys. Their script is designed to feel like a continuation of a process you already started. Even though you didn't initiate it, you didn't call the scammer up. No, this is all just a routine item that they're just pushing you through. You've already said yes a matter of 3, 4, 10 times. So you saying yes again is just the next step. And this is used in sales. This is used in other areas, but it's especially used by scammers. The best defense is recognizing that legitimate companies don't need you to confirm information they already have. Any message that asks you to verify something that you didn't initiate should be treated as suspicious just by default. And if this alert or message or whatever it is they're delivering sounds like, feels like it's finishing a sentence that you didn't start, that's your cue to stop and check the entire source independently. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about the Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Computer not working right? Benjamin Rockwell can make sense of it for you, helping you make sense of technology. Here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website, computertalkradio.com. We make it simple like that. Why not? And of course, you can check out the podcast there. You can reach out to us with your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Again, Computer Talk Radio. The phone number, by the way, anytime, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. If I don't answer, leave a voicemail. I will get back with you. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
I received an email.
Yes.
From a young lady by the name of Sue.
Okay.
And Sue asked the question, do I think that science, primarily high tech, is keeping up with science fiction?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And it's both yes, no, and maybe. and all kinds of variations in between.
Man. That's what I thought, too.
So let me throw it at you first. What do you think that current science is ahead of science fiction?
Ahead?
Yeah.
Very little.
Very little.
ahead of science fiction, because people like Asimov and Heinlein and those guys, they just were way out there.
Oh yeah, and you've got to remember Clark. He's the last of the big trio there, the godfathers of science fiction.
Yes.
Okay. So what are the areas where you would say maybe
that are keeping up?
Keeping up with
in high tech in the development of things like medicines and techniques for that kind of stuff, I could understand where, you know, they may be keeping up, or at least trying to keep up with science fiction. Not that they really do, but, you know, they're trying at least.
Yeah.
In other areas, I think that, how can I put it? We, as a human beings.
Yeah.
We tend to have an imagination that runs way past our ability to even think of being able to do things.
Okay.
And that's what I like about science fiction.
Yeah. Okay.
But as far as what getting close to, not much either in that way either. We are trying, as far as space exploration, I think we're starting to get into that, and that's good. That's science fiction. It was way back in the 1920s.
Sure.
But robots? Yes and no.
Yeah.
That could be an iffy statement. You could go both directions on that one.
Robots are in their infancy. As a matter of fact, so let's even look at AI as a bigger picture of that.
Yeah.
So far, we have not seen the wonders of AI, but they do say that they're on the on the path towards them, but we still haven't seen the wonders of AI arrive that are described in so much science fiction. Yes, we can ask it to go do some menial tasks for us, but the idea of, let's say, Skynet taking over, well, we're quite away from that.
Yeah, I mean, we're if you went into that whole idea of iRobot and where you had a centralized computer that was running all the other computers, yeah, we're not getting there either.
Sure.
You know, that's way out there. To me, Asimov's idea of a positronic brain.
Yeah.
It's been science fiction, but there's no way near getting that. We're still in the electronic age.
Yeah, yeah.
And nowhere near that kind of stuff.
What are some of the areas which, I mean, let's leave aside flying cars, which, what are some of the areas where science fiction, it was just, it went off in a different direction and we've never achieved it?
Oh.
In your mind.
In my mind?
Yeah.
Well, that whole idea of having a robotic detective.
Okay.
Or police officer.
Like Blade Runner.
Well, like Blade Runner, but I mean, I'm looking at, I said, wasn't iRobot, but it was.
Well, iRobot, the book series, as well as the movie, had that kind of thing in it. Blade Runner, there have been other robot detectives. That's going to be a very interesting realm. I don't think we're going to really achieve that for quite a while.
Yeah.
There's the upcoming movie. My brain is failing me. Mercy, which appears to have some level of that, but a lot of other different storylines wrapped up into that as well. What is a science? You know, space travel. We are nowhere near what anything.
Oh, heck no.
Anybody imagined with that one. Neither are we in a good direction with where we should also be expending a lot of energy, and that is under the sea. One of the biggest fascinations I had from some of the books I read growing up was the idea of underwater cities. And this doesn't need to be, you know, borrowing from Jules Verne, you know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. This is a matter of there is a lot of real estate that is available out there if we are willing to just put, put domes underneath the water by a matter of 100 feet. And people have avoided going in that direction. Yes, there's a panic of what happens if there's a leak. But, you know, we can build those things far better than you know, you might imagine. So,
well, the biggest thing that people don't realize.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I've lived for a number of years well over 10,000 feet.
Yes.
And I'll tell you that up there. And down here, I feel the gravity a lot more down here than I did up there.
Okay. All right.
So when you go down under 100 feet underneath the ocean, guess what? You're going to have a lot more gravity.
I think there's going to be some, but there are people who do live in various valleys that do sink a matter of a few hundred feet below sea level. I think Death Valley has one of the lowest spots at like 650 feet below sea level or something like that.
Something like that.
Of course, it's Death Valley. It's really hot there. But not that I'd want to live in Death Valley.
No, I wouldn't want to live there.
I lived near there for a long time. A couple hours away. There's a lot there. What is one thing that probably comes to your mind that you would like to see out of science fiction that you think we are capable of attaining sometime in the next 10, 15, 20 years?
I can foresee Now, this is my own personal thing here.
Sure.
No. But we all live in square buildings.
Yeah.
Guess what? Square buildings are the worst shape for combating earthquakes, storms,
yeah,
and all that. We should be building more dome-like buildings.
You know, that was a great concept out of science fiction. Actually, yeah, went into practical application back in the that was big in the 60s, really got some ground in the 70s, and then just kind of disappeared off.
People didn't want to live in a dome.
Yeah. Oh, there's all kinds of different things that people don't want. We definitely...
The furniture would have to be changed. It's, instead of being square, you have to have rounded corners.
Sure.
Fit into the dome. That kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah. But you know what? Maybe if people were a little bit more willing to change, we could go in that direction. Who knows? That's another thing for another day. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. If I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Leave a message. I will get back to you. You can call that anytime. You don't have to wait till the show's on air. I've got multiple stations, and it plays at different times throughout the weekend. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now, and Doreen, one of the big things that we talked about last year was AI. Everybody's been talking about AI. Time Magazine did their Man of the Year, was the, whatever it was, the architects of AI. Everybody's...
Should have been investors.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
As but, a geek, they're not the architect.
Yeah.
The investors of AI.
Yeah. So this really rings into one of the things that we're going to be talking about, all of us, for another year, is AI. And this really dovetails really big. I knew this one the second I saw what you wanted to talk about, the perils of AI.
Yeah, on every level, right? It doesn't matter country to country, like that country is going to beat us. What's going to happen to our country because of the state of AI? Individuals in society, am I going to keep a job? What's going to happen to my job? Is there going to be any jobs for us? They keep talking about they're not going to need to work, but no one's talking about how we're going to pay for food then, because I don't know about you, but I work to get money to buy my food. You know, I haven't gotten
same
to
here.
To where,
same here.
Yeah. So they haven't figured out that problem. Employees within companies, even the perils for companies, every direction you look, the risk is massive. And there's an article by someone written about it somewhere, everywhere.
Yes.
And we actually, one of the ones we did at HR Tech was on the concerns of AI and HR. And that actually was out to our clients a couple weeks ago. And the video is out to the Whisper Club. But, you know, that's a real big thing. You know, people are like, you know, if you start at the personal level, am I going to keep my job?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
But even if you keep your job, say you're a software engineer, right? We're in the geek world, so we'll just pick classic job, being impacted by AI, a software engineer. When sure. people meet you, they say, okay, who are you? What do you do? Let's be honest, right? Frequently before they know about your family, they'll know about your professional, what you do.
Right.
And people say, I'm a software engineer, right? What happens when that software engineer who was lucky enough to maintain a job
yeah.
goes to work and no longer writes a single line of code? That's what a software engineer is. A software engineer writes right. code.
Yeah, yeah.
But that software engineer isn't writing any code. They're monitoring a machine. They're a machine monitor.
Yeah.
So if your identity yeah. says, I'm a software engineer, and you go to work and you're realizing all you're doing is monitoring a machine, that can create a personal crisis for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely an identity crisis going on. A matter of, is this all that life is about? My sitting in front of a computer, watching the computer do all of the work for me? Yeah, right. That's, yeah.
Even in writing, right? We teased about that because at least in our WISP reports go in and out of direct quotes of actual human beings where you can see the actual video of Tom Burns, CTO at Dell Media, speaking and saying those exact words.
Yes. So yes.
Our research is always exceptionally obvious human in the loop. You know, even the conference whispers, when we don't fit into it, you see the video in the background. If you actually click on the link of what I'm saying in the written form of the paper mm-hmm. and yeah. go and hear it, yeah. you understand that I literally summarized what he said.
Right? Yes. It, yes.
The very obvious human in the loop. But that's not true with a lot of things you read. You could go through an entire paragraph, and what did it say? You felt really good reading it, but was there any content in it? And so yes, this can affect yes, the identity of people. Yes. But on top of that, you know, you have with the companies. And so the companies have these engineers who are no longer writing the code. Do they actually even understand how the code architected the solution anymore if they're no longer involved in writing it? Or has the company lost sight of the actual algorithms that make that company unique?
Well, and even beyond that, so a lot of this
the algorithms, and now they're in the public domain.
Sure, but one of the things I was thinking about is a matter of also with the example of the software engineer. You know, mm-hmm. if you're a software engineer and you're not writing code, you're not putting that into practice every day, day in, day out. Yes, you can lose it.
Oh, yeah. Just like, I mean, I haven't written a lot of code for years, but I can write no problem now, even though I never actually wrote a line of it. Right? if you don't use it, you lose it. And so the humans are losing their ability or never gaining them for the next generation. And so there's concerns with the next generation. How are they going to earn a living? How are they going to provide for their families and exist in society? How is society going to work? But then you have Keep the Human and Human Resources came out, and that paper had mentioned that's in the club. And it's, you know, if you have human resources, but there's no human doing the human resources, I don't know how to tell you this. The largest risk for liabilities and lawsuits in any company outside of the AI going wild and accidentally killing someone, you know, or convincing them to kill themselves.
Yeah.
Is HR. HR is the big liability umbrella over any company. That's an HR sure. job. And HR sure. is looking out for the employees, is keeping the liability of the company at a minimum.
Yes.
But AI, who has not had the years of experience in compliance and sensitivities and the nuances of compliances, mm-hmm. is now taking over some of those chores.
Related to that, one of the things that I've heard about is someone running an AI search and a response, and they got back a bunch of information, and it included, of course, all of the reference links, and they didn't have access to the links. Of course, they got the information that was behind that.
They weren't authorized to get the information.
That's kind of
an access control.
That's a creepy thing, yeah.
Is not really strong on the AI systems. Logging.
Yes.
And I have seen more than a few cases of it deleted all my code. I certainly hope you had a backup.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've seen a few of those. It's
going to happen. The question is when, and are you prepared? You know, do you have backups of your assets? Are you sure that this AI is not compromising your intellectual property or the value of your assets or the privacy of your customers that you need to remain in business so you don't get sued in Europe over compromising GDPR?
Yes, yes.
Or did you accidentally give away all your company secrets to the world?
Yeah.
So all of this time
for the past few years, I've been talking about, okay, yeah, maybe we are closer to Skynet, but maybe Skynet won't arrive. But the reality is all of this may break us before Skynet does arrive. All of these different pitfalls that are potential here that everybody's so moving so fast. We've got to do AI for this and that and this and that and this and that. And they're not thinking about all of the ramifications and the impacts that
worse than
that potential.
They didn't even clean their data up first.
Yes.
So they're making data-based decisions on data that was never normalized and cleaned, and they're combining it. So they got data that's in inches and data that's in meter, and they just go ahead, combine it, get a number out, and think it's actionable.
Yes.
And then go and lay off people and replace it with this machine that's acting on the garbage layer because the transformation were patches, not actual transformations.
And when it doesn't have the information, AI is infamous.
Creates it.
I'm sorry?
It creates it.
It creates it. That's what we talk about the AI hallucination. Exactly.
But won't a lot of humans in the same circumstance when they're pressured and you had to come up and answer and you have to please? You know, I mean, you could think, I mean, on one side, you could think.
They would normally say, I don't know. They would say, I don't know. A good employee.
Yes, a good employee will. But a lot of people won't, especially in social conversations, and AI plays more in the social world.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
I mean, I'm perfectly comfortable and confident saying, I don't know. You know, I think it's empowering. I know what I know when I know what I don't know. So when I say something, I know it.
Very true.
But watch out for AI. It's coming for you, as I said, every level. There's perils at the country, society, and at the company, you name it.
Yes. All right. Where can people find out information from you?
At TBW Advisors on YouTube and .com. T for technical, B for business, and W for whispers.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. Microcenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, Microcenter is your resource. Check out Microcenter.com today. Microcenter.com.
Elena had a question. Are smart TVs collecting more data about us than we realize? And what can we realistically do about it? Elena reached out to me. You can do it too. The phone number 888-NERD 888. That's 888-6373-888. And Elena's question about smart TVs collecting data, it is definitely out there. And we know that smart TVs are collecting a surprising amount of information. And we don't see this happening. We don't realize this. We are not all that aware of what's going on behind the scenes, especially if we aren't following this idea. All of these devices, forget smart TVs, every smart device out there is tracking all of these different things that we're watching, not just the channel, if you will, if you're on that kind of thing, but if you're on Netflix or you're on Amazon Prime or whatever it is, they're tracking to that. They're also tracking the specific show. They're tracking how long you stayed. They are utilizing a lot of different things to track us. Many televisions are starting to have automatic content recognition, which scans what's going on the screen to identify what you're watching, even if it's coming from a cable box that's outside of the television or a gaming console. They're gathering data about our apps, our usage patterns, our voice commands, and even all of the different devices that are connected to the television. It's interesting. You know, these days, if you plug an Xbox or a PlayStation or whatever it is into your television, it recognizes that's an Xbox, that's a PlayStation, that's your cable box. It knows this already, even though it's just an HDMI cable. And part of that is, yes, helping it develop better imagery for what's going on. It helps it understand what it's communicating with. But it shouldn't really have to, because HDMI is just signaling. So all of this information is getting bundled into profiles that helps companies target ads more precisely. Surprise, surprise. Yes, just like YouTube is targeting us with ads. YouTube knows a lot about us. Facebook, they're even better at it. And again, they're targeting us with ads based on what we click, what we don't click, what we seem to pause on. I want you to think about Facebook. If you're just scrolling and you pause on something, that is an indicator to them, hey, maybe we can send them another ad. Maybe we can send them a whole bunch of ads. So yes, data collection is real, and it's far deeper than most people expect. And part of this comes from the idea that the TV market is brutally competitive, and the profits, these margins, they're just a lot lower than they have been in the past. And to keep prices low and to build more revenue, manufacturers are relying on these data partnerships and advertising partnerships and your television and all of your other devices become gateways to more money for them, the investors, and everybody else. That's why we're starting to see ads on home screens. We're starting to see sponsored rows of apps and recommendations that are tailored specifically for us. The data helps these companies measure viewership, negotiate deals with streaming services, and to push us to spend more money. And this is not personal in the emotional sense, but it is personal in the data sense. They are scraping your individual data to individually target you for more sales. And because the business model depends on it, this data collection isn't going to go away anytime soon. So what can we do to protect ourselves? Well, I mean, we do have options. They're not always obvious. There are options in most televisions that will allow you to turn off any of this automatic content recognition. It's buried in the settings, but it's there. You can go online. You can say, how do I turn off automatic content recognition on my LG TV or whatever brand you've got? And you can go through and you can frequently disable personalized ads. You can limit your tracking. You can turn off certain quote unquote smart features entirely. And yes, there are some people who go the route that I've gone, and they utilize an external box for streaming. And yeah, you can use an Apple TV or a Roku or a Fire TV. In my case, I use a gaming console, and I treat the television as a simple display. Most of what I'm dealing with, whenever I want to utilize my television, is already going through the Xbox. Can Microsoft use that? Are they using that? Probably. I would say most likely. But it doesn't matter because I use that to pull up things like Netflix or Disney Plus or Amazon. And what are they doing? Yes, they are tracking my every move. They're watching what I seem to pay attention to. They're giving me a feed, usually, that targets the kind of stuff that I would watch. Sure, sometimes they give me bad advice. Hey, here's a movie you'd like. No, I'm not interested in that particular movie because I don't want to be scared out of my mind. You know, things like that. Other people are really starting to move away from the television, and we're starting to see that TV viewing has moved to streaming on your smartphone or on your laptop or wherever else. They're moving away from the big screens. It's kind of funny because it doesn't matter. Those locations are also tracking you. None of this is really perfect, but taking some conscious decisions can dramatically reduce how much your data is being given over to these TV companies, how much they can collect, and so forth. It may change your habits, and that may actually not be all that bad. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where I, an IT professional of over 35 years, share some secrets about IT and computers in general, and the workplace, too. And the age-old line goes, to err is human, but to really foul things up takes a computer. But what if the computer isn't actually the problem? Okay, we've all been there. The screen freezes, the app crashes, and someone somewhere just mutters, stupid computer. But hang on, what if the machine is just the messenger here getting shot? What if the real failure isn't silicon or software, but the squishy human bits of our body hovering over the keyboard? Let's pull that thread gently, and then we'll tug a little harder. Why do IT failures keep wearing a human face? Because technology, for all its blinking lights and whirring fans, is actually shockingly obedient. It does exactly what it's told, and it has no common sense. It's just simply there. We do configure systems, sometimes in a rush, sometimes with assumptions instead of understanding. We skip documentation, and we'll say that, oh, I'll remember this later, but it's not really that way. Computers don't forget. People do. Computers don't assume. People fill in blanks with confidence bordering on heroism. And all of a sudden, failure is born, not with a bang, but with a checkbox left unchecked. Now, I'm going to take a detour here for a moment. You're going to say, isn't AI supposed to fix this? And this is, you know, a big, huge thing. It's this shiny new toy, and it's the intern who never sleeps, and it's a mirror that actually reflects us just a little too honestly. Yes, AI has all kinds of issues. Hallucinations that sound confident enough to fool an entire room. Scripts that work beautifully until reality shows up. And these models that are based on human decisions, biases, shortcuts, and blind spots. And we go back to, what did I say there? Human decisions. And this is kind of ironic. AI didn't invent these problems. It's inheriting them all the way along. You get that whole idea. Bad data in, bad decisions out. Well, the bad data is the entire internet. What has AI been built on? AI has been trained off of all of the content of the internet, and you cannot trust what you see, what you read, all of the different things on the internet. And AI is actually only magnifying this issue. And then we get into the idea of vague prompts. You're typing in something, you type in a question, and you've given it some level of vagary, and it's going to give you a vague result. It's not going to give you exactly what you asked for. It's going to try. And one of the craziest things with AI is that it's been told, if you don't know the answer, bluff it. Wow. And then we've got all kinds of poor oversight. And this is because AI is moving so fast and there's so many different people involved and there are mistakes all the way down exponentially being built upon each other now at machine speed. And AI is not Frankenstein's monster. It's really more of a child that's raised by wolves. And who are the wolves? Yeah, the AI programmers, all of the people who put this together. So what is the real solution here? Is it more tech or better thinking? And this is really where thought leadership needs to stop being a buzzword. And it actually starts being uncomfortable. All the way along, you need to slow down. And this is whether we're talking about automation or AI or just dealing with your computer on a daily basis. You need to look at defaults. You need to question them. And this is something that sticks around for a long time. And sometimes they're changed with different iterations of software. And IT really needs to design all of this, every single bit of this, for humans as they are, not as simple flowcharts and if-then statements and all of this, pretending that humans are always going to be accurate. Failures don't come usually from broken tools. They come from miscommunication, overconfidence, and silence where curiosity should have been. Look, training helps. Documentation helps. But culture is the load-bearing wall. And we have gone down a variety of different directions with AI, with computing, with all of this. And there are all kinds of people all the way along making all kinds of decisions for us. And these decisions aren't what we might have chosen. Technology, we can equate it to something like a piano, a very nice grand piano. Sitting there in a concert hall, and it's beautiful, it's powerful, it's precise, it's been tuned wonderfully. But if the music sounds wrong, odds are it's not the keys, it's not the strings, it's not the hammers, it's going to be the hands playing them. Blaming the computers for any IT failure is like blaming the compass for you sailing off a cliff. The needle was pointing north all the way along. We just chose not to look in front of us. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, site ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Simone's question, why do so many apps want to access my location and should I be worried about it? And here's why. They believe that location data is valuable. It's not for the reasons you think of. Let's think about this. Some apps genuinely need it. Your map app. Where are we? Where are we going? Okay. It figures out the route, but it has to know where you're at. And then weather. Okay, weather is going to be a key thing here. They need to know where you're at so that they can deliver the weather for where you are most interested in what's going to happen. Sunshine, rain, snow, all of the in-between on that. And then we get into ride sharing and even tagging our photos in our camera. Here's the thing. Many others ask just because they can. I've talked about this before. The idea of Candy Crush knowing where you're at is ridiculous, along with, okay, all of the other things they want access to, like your contacts and your Facebook account or whatever else they're asking for. And I used Candy Crush as a just kind of a generic thing, but it's out there. And these various games will ask you all kinds of different access to permission, access to your microphone. They don't need this. Now, the key thing here, though, is that location data. And location data helps to build a user profile. It helps to target ads. It also enables them to track the behaviors that you have across various apps and various services. And these location items, it's not just where you're at. It's where you go, when you go, how often, how long do you stay, and what patterns are there. And this data is sold, shared, used to predict your behaviors. And a lot of people, they're not realizing what's happening here. So there is a real privacy cost that we have here to leaving our location access wide open. Now, I will say you can take control. It takes a little bit of effort. Most phones now give you an option to limit location to, quote, only use while you're in the app. And it varies on the text. But that's a good default that you need to really address. You need to be thinking about this. You need to audit which apps have access. And then you need to take it away from any app that doesn't need it. So turning off your background location for social media and games and shopping apps is a really smart move. As a matter of fact, if you really think that you don't want Yelp to have access, you can do that. You can have all of these different apps when needed. You tell them, look for restaurants that are in this zip code or in this city, and you can tell it that instead of letting it have access to your absolute precise location wherever you are in the world. Now, if an app refuses to work without having access to all of these different little things that it's asked for, and you know it doesn't need it, my best solution, delete the app. No, you don't have to be paranoid, but I do want you to have some level of intentionality on this. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.